A man watching his greatest dream become reality. Raziel, he breathed. The angel continued to rise as if the lake were sinking away, revealing a great column of marble at its center. First his head emerged from the water, streaming hair like chains of silver and gold, then shoulders, white as stone, and then a bare torso. And Clary saw that the angel was marked all over with runes, just as the Nephilim were, although Raziel's runes were golden and alive, moving across his white skin like sparks flying from a flame. Somehow, at the same time, the angel was both enormous and no bigger than a man. Clary's eyes hurt trying to take all of him in, and yet he was all that she could see. As he rose, wings burst from his back and opened wide across the lake, and they were gold too, and feathered, and set into each feather was a single golden staring eye. It was beautiful, and also terrifying. Clary wanted to look away, but she wouldn't. She would watch it all. She would watch it for Jace, because he couldn't. It's just like all those pictures, she thought. The angel, rising from the lake, the sword in one hand and the cup in the other. Both were streaming water, but Raziel was dry as a bone, his wings undampened. His feet rested white and bare on the surface of the lake, stirring its waters into small ripples of movement. His face, beautiful and inhuman, gazed down at Valentine. And then he spoke. His voice was like a cry and a shout, and like music, all at once. It contained no words, yet was totally comprehensible. The force of his breath nearly knocked Valentine backward. He dug the heels of his boots into the sand. His head tilted back as if he were walking against a gale. Clary felt the wind of the angel's breath pass over her. It was hot like air escaping from a furnace, and smelled of strange spices. "It has been 1,000 years since I was last summoned to this place," Raziel said. "Jonathan Shadowhunter called on me then, and begged me to mix my blood with the blood of mortal men in a cup, and created a race of warriors who would rid this earth of demonkind. I did all that he asked and told him I would do no more. Why do you summon me now, Nephilim?" Valentine's voice was eager. 1,000 years have passed, glorious one, but demonkind are still here. What is that to me? 1,000 years for an angel pass between one blink of an eye and another. The Nephilim you created were a great race of men. For many years they valiantly battled to rid this plane of demon taint, but they have failed due to weakness and corruption in their ranks. I intend to return them to their former glory. Glory? The angel sounded faintly curious, as if the word were strange to him. Glory belongs to God alone. Valentine didn't waver. The clave, as the first Nephilim created it, exists no more. They have allied themselves with downworlders, the demon-tainted non-humans who infest this world like fleas on the carcass of a rat. It is my intention to cleanse this world, to destroy every downworlder along with every demon. Demons do not possess souls, but as for the creatures you speak of, the children of Moon, Night, Lilith, and Fairy, all are souled. It seems that your rules as to what does and does not constitute a human being are stricter than our own. Clary could have sworn the angel's voice had taken on a dry tone. Do you intend to challenge heaven like that other morning star whose name you bear, Shadowhunter? Not to challenge heaven, no, Lord Raziel. To ally myself with heaven. In a war of your making? We are heaven, Shadowhunter. We do not fight in your mundane battles. When Valentine spoke again, he sounded almost hurt. Lord Raziel, surely you would not have allowed such a thing as a ritual by which you might be summoned to exist if you did not intend to be summoned. We Nephilim are your children. We need your guidance. Guidance? Now the angel sounded amused. That hardly seems to be why you brought me here. You seek rather your own renown.
Renown? Valentine echoed hoarsely. I have given everything for this cause. My wife, my children. I have not withheld my sons. I have given everything I have for this. Everything. The angel simply hovered, gazing down at Valentine with his weird, inhuman eyes. His wings moved in slow, undeliberate motions, like the passage of clouds across the sky. At last he said, "God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son on an altar much like this one, to see who it was that Abraham loved more, Isaac or God. But no one asked you to sacrifice your son, Valentine." Valentine glanced down at the altar at his feet, splashed with Jace's blood, and then back up at the angel. "If I must, I will compel this from you," he said. "But I would rather have your willing cooperation." "When Jonathan Shadowhunter summoned me," said the angel, "I gave him my assistance because I could see that his dream of a world free of demons was a true one. He imagined a heaven on this earth. But you dream only of your own glory, and you do not love heaven. My brother Ithuriel can attest to that." Valentine blanched.
"But..."
"Do you think that I would not know?" The angel smiled. It was the most terrible smile Clary had ever seen. "It is true that the master of the circle you have drawn can compel from me a single action, but you are not that master." Valentine stared.
"My Lord Raziel, there is no one else."
"But there is," said the angel. "There is your daughter."
Valentine whirled. Clary, lying half-conscious in the sand, her wrists and arms a screaming agony, stared defiantly back. For a moment their eyes met, and he looked at her, really looked at her, and she realized it was the first time her father had ever looked her in the face and seen her, the first and only time.
"Clarissa," he said, "what have you done?"
Clary stretched out her hand, and with her finger she wrote in the sand at his feet. She didn't draw runes. She drew words. The words he had said to her the first time he'd seen what she could do, when she'd drawn the rune that had destroyed his ship. "Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin." His eyes widened, just as Jace's eyes had widened before he died. Valentine had gone bone white. He turned slowly to face the angel, raising his hands in a gesture of supplication.
"My Lord Raziel."
The angel opened his mouth and spat. Or at least that was how it seemed to Clary, that the angel spat. And that what came from his mouth was a shooting spark of white fire, like a burning arrow. The arrow flew straight and true across the water and buried itself in Valentine's chest. Or maybe buried wasn't the word. It tore through him, like a rock through thin paper, leaving a smoking hole the size of a fist. For a moment, Clary, staring up, could look through her father's chest and see the lake and the fiery glow of the angel beyond. The moment passed. Like a felled tree, Valentine crashed to the ground and lay still, his mouth open in a silent cry, his blind eyes fixed forever in a last look of incredulous betrayal. "That was the justice of heaven. I trust that you are not dismayed." Clary looked up. The angel hovered over her like a tower of white flame blotting out the sky. His voice was the collision of mountains. "You can compel me to one action, Clarissa Morgenstern. What is it that you want?" Clary opened her mouth. No sound came out. "Ah, yes," the angel said, and there was gentleness in his voice now. "The rune." The many eyes in his wings blinked. Something brushed over her. It was soft, softer than silk or any other cloth, softer than a whisper or the brush of a feather. It was what she imagined clouds might feel like if they had a texture. A faint scent came with the touch, a pleasant scent, heady and sweet. The pain vanished from her wrists. No longer bound together, her hands fell to her sides. The stinging at the back of her neck was gone too, and the heaviness from her legs. She struggled to her knees. More than anything, she wanted to crawl across the bloody sand toward the place where Jace's body lay, crawl to him and lay down beside him and put her arms around him, even though he was gone. But the angel's voice compelled her. She remained where she was, staring up into his brilliant golden light. "The battle on Brosselin Plain is ending. Morgenstern's hold over his demons vanished with his death. Already many are fleeing. The rest will soon be destroyed. There are Nephilim riding to the shores of this lake at this very moment. If you have a request, Shadow Hunter, speak it now. The angel paused. And remember that I am not a genie. Choose your desire wisely.
Clary hesitated, only for a moment. But the moment stretched out as long as any moment ever had.
She could ask for anything, she thought dizzily, anything. An end to pain or world hunger or disease, or for peace on earth. But then again, perhaps these things weren't in the power of angels to grant, or they would have already been granted. And perhaps people were supposed to find these things for themselves. It didn't matter anyway. There was only one thing she could ask for in the end, only one real choice. She raised her eyes to the angels.
"Jace," she said.
The angel's expression didn't change. She had no idea whether Raziel thought her request a good one or a bad one, or whether, she thought with a sudden burst of panic, he intended to grant it at all.
"Close your eyes, Clarissa Morgenstern," the angel said.
Clary shut her eyes. You didn't say no to an angel, no matter what it had in mind. Her heart pounding, she sat floating in the darkness behind her eyelids, resolutely trying not to think of Jace. But his face appeared against the blank screen of her closed eyelids anyway, not smiling at her but looking sidelong, and she could see the scar at his temple, the uneven curl at the corner of his mouth, and the silver line on his throat where Simon had bitten him. All the marks and flaws and imperfections that made up the person she loved most in the world. Jace. A bright light lit her vision to scarlet, and she fell back against the sand, wondering if she was going to pass out, or maybe she was dying. But she didn't want to die. Not now that she could see Jace's face so clearly in front of her. She could almost hear his voice, too, saying her name, the way he'd whispered it at Renwick's, over and over again. "Clary, Clary, Clary."
"Clary," Jace said, "open your eyes." She did.
She was lying on the sand in her torn, wet, and bloodied clothes. That was the same. What was not the same was that the angel was gone, and with him the blinding white light that had lit the darkness today. She was gazing up at the night sky, white stars like mirrors shining in the blackness, and leaning over her, the light in his eyes more brilliant than any of the stars, was Jace. Her eyes drank him in, every part of him, from his tangled hair to his blood-stained, grimy face to his eyes shining through the layers of dirt, from the bruises visible through his torn sleeves to the gaping, blood-soaked tear down the front of his shirt through which his bare skin showed. And there was no mark, no gash to indicate where the sword had gone in. She could see the pulse beating in his throat, and almost threw her arms around him at the sight because it meant his heart was beating, and that meant...
"You're alive," she whispered, "really alive."
With a slow wonderment, he reached to touch her face.
"I was in the dark," he said softly. "There was nothing there but shadows, and I was a shadow, and I knew that I was dead, and it was over, all of it. And then I heard your voice. I heard you say my name, and it brought me back."
"Not me," Clary's throat tightened. "The angel brought you back."
"Because you asked him to."
Silently he traced the outline of her face with his fingers, as if reassuring himself that she was real.
"You could have had anything else in the world, and you asked for me."
She smiled up at him. Filthy as he was, covered in blood and dirt, he was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen.
"But I don't want anything else in the world."
At that, the light in his eyes, already bright, went to such a blaze that she could hardly bear to look at him. She thought of the angel and how he had burned like 1,000 torches, and that Jace had in him some of that same incandescent blood, and how that burning shone through him now, through his eyes, like light through the cracks in a door.
"I love you," Clary wanted to say. "And I would do it again. I would always ask for you."
But those weren't the words she said.
"You're not my brother," she told him,
a little breathlessly, as if, having realized she hadn't yet said them, she couldn't get the words out of her mouth fast enough.
"You know that, right?"
Very slightly, through the grime and blood, Jace grinned.
"Yes," he said. "I know that."
Epilogue. Across the Sky in Stars. I loved you, so I drew these tides of men into my hands and wrote my will across the sky in stars. T. E. Lawrence. The smoke rose in a lazy spiral, tracing delicate lines of black across the clear air. Jace, alone on the hill overlooking the cemetery, sat with his elbows on his knees and watched the smoke drift heavenward. The irony wasn't lost on him. These were his father's remains, after all. He could see the bier from where he was sitting, obscured by smoke and flame, and the small group standing around it. He recognized Jocelyn's bright hair from here, and Luke standing beside her, his hand on her back. Jocelyn had her head turned aside, away from the burning pyre. Jace could have been one of that group, had he wanted to be. He'd spent the last couple of days in the infirmary, and they'd only let him out this morning, partly so that he could attend Valentine's funeral. But he'd gotten halfway to the pyre, a stacked pile of stripped wood, white as bones, and realized he could go no farther. He turned and walked up the hill instead, away from the mourners' procession. Luke had called after him, but Jace hadn't turned. He'd sat and watched them gather around the bier, watched Patrick Penhallow in his parchment-white gear set the flame to the wood. It was the second time that week he'd watched a body burn, but Max's had been heartbreakingly small. And Valentine was a big man, even flat on his back with his arms crossed over his chest, a seraph blade gripped in his fist. His eyes were bound with white silk, as was the custom. They had done well by him, Jace thought, despite everything. They hadn't buried Sebastian. A group of shadow hunters had gone back to the valley, but they hadn't found his body. Washed away by the river, they'd told Jace, though he had his doubts. He had looked for Clary in the crowd around the bier, but she wasn't there. It had been almost 2 days now since he'd last seen her, at the lake, and he missed her with an almost physical sense of something lacking. It wasn't her fault they hadn't seen each other. She'd been worried he wasn't strong enough to portal back to Alicante from the lake that night, and she'd turned out to be right. By the time the first shadow hunters had reached them, he'd been drifting into a dizzy unconsciousness. He'd woken up the next day in the city hospital with Magnus Bane staring down at him with an odd expression. It could have been deep concern or merely curiosity. It was hard to tell with Magnus. Magnus told him that though the angel had healed Jace physically, it seemed that his spirit and mind had been exhausted to the point that only rest could heal them. In any event, he felt better now, just in time for the funeral. A wind had come up and was blowing the smoke away from him. In the distance he could see the glimmering towers of Alicante, their former glory restored. He wasn't totally sure what he hoped to accomplish by sitting here and watching his father's body burn, or what he would say if he were down there among the mourners, speaking their last words to Valentine. "You were never really my father," he might say, or, "You were the only father I ever knew." Both statements were equally true, no matter how contradictory. When he'd first opened his eyes at the lake, knowing, somehow, that he'd been dead, and now wasn't, all Jace could think about was Clary, lying a little distance away from him on the bloody sand, her eyes closed. He'd scrambled to her in a near panic, thinking she might be hurt or even dead. And when she'd opened her eyes, all he'd been able to think about then was that she wasn't. Not until there were others there, helping him to his feet, exclaiming over the scene in amazement, did he see Valentine's body lying crumpled near the lake's edge, and feel the force of it like a punch in the stomach. He'd known Valentine was dead, would have killed him, himself, but still, somehow, the sight was painful. Clary had looked at Jace with sad eyes, and he'd known that even though she'd hated Valentine and had never had any reason not to, she still felt Jace's loss. He half closed his eyes, and a flood of images washed across the backs of his eyelids, Valentine picking him up off the grass in a sweeping hug, Valentine holding him in the prow of a boat on a lake, showing him how to balance. And other, darker memories. Valentine's hand cracking across the side of his face. A dead falcon. The angel shackled in the Wayland cellar. Jace. He looked up. Luke was standing over him, a black silhouette outlined by the sun. He was wearing jeans and a flannel shirt as usual. No concessionary funeral white for him.
"It's over," Luke said. "The ceremony. It was brief."
"I'm sure it was." Jace dug his fingers into the ground beside him, welcoming the painful scrape of dirt against his fingertips.
Did anyone say anything?
Just the usual words.
Luke eased himself down onto the ground beside Jace, wincing a little. Jace hadn't asked him what the battle had been like. He hadn't really wanted to know. He knew it had been over much quicker than anyone had expected. After Valentine's death, the demons he had summoned had fled into the night like so much mist burned off by the sun. But that didn't mean there hadn't been deaths. Valentine's hadn't been the only body burned in Alicante these past days. And Clary wasn't, I mean, she didn't...
Come to the funeral?
No, she didn't want to. Jace could feel Luke looking at him sideways.
You haven't seen her, not since...
No, not since the lake, Jace said. This was the first time they let me leave the hospital, and I had to come here.
You didn't have to, Luke said. You could have stayed away.
I wanted to, Jace admitted, whatever that says about me.
Funerals are for the living, Jace, not for the dead. Valentine was more your father than Clary's, even if you didn't share blood. You're the one who has to say goodbye. You're the one who will miss him.
I didn't think I was allowed to miss him.
You never knew Stephen Herondale, said Luke. And you came to Robert Lightwood when you were only barely still a child. Valentine was the father of your childhood. You should miss him.
I keep thinking about Hodge, Jace said, up at the guard. I kept asking him why he'd never told me what I was. I still thought I was part demon then. And he kept saying it was because he didn't know. I just thought he was lying, but now I think he meant it. He was one of the only people who ever even knew there was a Herondale baby that had lived. When I showed up at the Institute, he had no idea which of Valentine's sons I was, the real one or the adopted one. And I could have been either, the demon or the angel. And the thing is, I don't think he ever knew, not until he saw Jonathan at the guard and realized. So he just tried to do his best by me all those years anyway, until Valentine showed up again. That took a sort of faith, don't you think?
Yes, Luke said. I think so.
Hodge said he thought maybe upbringing might make a difference, regardless of blood. I just keep thinking, if I'd stayed with Valentine, if he hadn't sent me to the Lightwoods, would I have been just like Jonathan? Is that how I'd be now?
Does it matter? Said Luke. You are who you are now for a reason. And if you ask me, I think Valentine sent you to the Lightwoods because he knew it was the best chance for you. Maybe he had other reasons, too. But you can't get away from the fact that he sent you to people he knew would love you and raise you with love. It might have been one of the few things he ever really did for someone else.
He clapped Jace on the shoulder, a gesture so paternal that it almost made Jace smile. I wouldn't forget about that if I were you. Clary, standing and looking out Isabel's window, watched smoke stain the sky over Alicante like a smudged hand against a window. They were burning Valentine today, she knew, burning her father in the necropolis just outside the gates.
You know about the celebration tonight, don't you?
Clary turned to see Isabel behind her, holding up two dresses against herself, one blue and one steel gray.
What do you think I should wear?
For Isabel, Clary thought, clothes would always be therapy.
The blue one?
Isabel laid the dresses down on the bed.
What are you going to wear? You are going, aren't you?
Clary thought of the silver dress at the bottom of Amatis's chest, the lovely gossamer of it. But Amatis would probably never let her wear it.
I don't know, she said.
Probably jeans and my green coat.
Boring,
Isabel said. She glanced over at Aline, who was sitting in a chair by the bed, reading.
Don't you think it's boring?
I think you should let Clary wear what she wants. Aline didn't look up from her book. Besides, it's not like she's dressing up for anyone.
She's dressing up for Jace, Isabel said, as if this were obvious. As well she should.
Aline looked up, blinking in confusion, then smiled. Oh, right, I keep forgetting. It must be weird, right, knowing he's not your brother?
No, Clary said firmly. Thinking he was my brother was weird. This feels right.
She looked back toward the window.
Not that I've really seen him since I found out. Not since we've been back in Alicante.
That's strange, said Aline.
It's not strange, Isabel said, shooting Aline a meaningful look, which Aline didn't seem to notice. He's been in the hospital. He only got out today.
And he didn't come to see you right away? Aline asked Clary.
He couldn't, Clary said. He had Valentine's funeral to go to. He couldn't miss that.
Maybe, said Aline cheerfully. Or maybe he's not that interested in you anymore. I mean, now that it's not forbidden. Some people only want what they can't have.
Not Jace, Isabel said quickly. Jace isn't like that.
Aline stood up, dropping her book onto the bed. I should go get dressed. See you guys tonight? And with that, she wandered out of the room, humming to herself. Isabel watched her go, shook her head.
Do you think she doesn't like you? She said. I mean, is she jealous? She did seem interested in Jace.
Huh. Clary was briefly amused. No, she's not interested in Jace. I think she's just one of those people who say whatever they're thinking whenever they think it. And who knows? Maybe she's right.
Isabel pulled the pin from her hair, letting it fall down around her shoulders. She came across the room and joined Clary at the window. The sky was clear now past the demon towers. The smoke was gone.
Do you think she's right?
I don't know. I'll have to ask Jace. I guess I'll see him tonight at the party. Or the victory celebration, or whatever it's called.
She looked up at Isabel.
Do you know what it'll be like?
There'll be a parade, Isabel said. And fireworks, probably.
Music, dancing, games, that sort of thing. Like a big street fair in New York.
She glanced out the window, her expression wistful.
Max would have loved it.
Clary reached out and stroked Isabel's hair, the way she'd stroke the hair of her own sister if she had one.
I know he would.
Jace had to knock twice at the door of the old canal house before he heard quick footsteps hurrying to answer. His heart jumped, and then settled as the door opened and Amatis Herondale stood on the threshold, looking at him in surprise. She looked as if she'd been getting ready for the celebration. She wore a long dove gray dress and pale metallic earrings that picked out the silvery streaks in her graying hair.
Yes?
Clary, he began, and stopped, unsure what exactly to say. Where had his eloquence gone? He'd always had that, even when he hadn't had anything else. But now he felt as if he'd been ripped open and all the clever, facile words had poured out of him, leaving him empty.
I was wondering if Clary was here. I was hoping to talk to her.
Amatis shook her head. The blankness had gone from her expression, and she was looking at him intently enough to make him nervous. She's not. I think she's with the Lightwoods.
Oh.
He was surprised at how disappointed he felt.
Sorry to have bothered you.
It's no bother. I'm glad you're here, actually, she said briskly. There was something I wanted to talk to you about. Come into the hall. I'll be right back. Jay stepped inside as she disappeared down the hallway. He wondered what on earth she could have to talk to him about. Maybe Clary had decided she wanted nothing more to do with him and had chosen Amatis to deliver the message. Amatis was back in a moment. She wasn't holding anything that looked like a note, to Jace's relief, but rather she was clutching a small metal box in her hands. It was a delicate object, chased with a design of birds.
Jace, Amatis said, Luke told me that you're Stevens, that Stephen Herondale was your father. He told me everything that happened.
Jace nodded, which was all he felt called on to do. The news was leaking out slowly, which was how he liked it. Hopefully he'd be back in New York before everyone in Idris knew and was constantly staring at him.
You know I was married to Stephen before your mother was.
Amatis went on, her voice tight, as if the words hurt to say. Jay stared at her.
Was this about his mother? Did she resent him for bringing up bad memories of a woman who died before he was ever born?
Of all the people alive today, I probably knew your father best.
Yes, Jay said, wishing he were elsewhere. I'm sure that's true.
I know you probably have feelings about him that are very mixed, she said, surprising him mainly because it was true. You never knew him, and he wasn't the man who raised you, but you look like him. Except for your eyes, those are your mother's. And maybe I'm being crazy, bothering you with this. Maybe you don't really want to know about Stephen at all, but he was your father, and if he'd known you...
She thrust the box at him then, nearly making him jump back. These are some things of his that I saved over the years. Letters he wrote, photographs, a family tree. His witchlight stone. Maybe you don't have questions now, but someday perhaps you will, and when you do, you'll have this.
She stood still, giving him the box as if she